Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. This Sunday, May 28th, Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts will open Building 6, the Robert W. Wilson Building, to the public. This beyond grand opening doubles the vast museum's exhibition space and features long-term installations and collaborations with global leaders in contemporary art. Last week, curator Denise Marconish took me through the new space.
Building 6 is the largest single building on our campus. Now that we've renovated this, where it's going to connect to all the other galleries, it takes you to the very edges of our campus. So walking through the building, there's windows on both sides. The Hoosick River also branches around both sides of this building. And so when you're walking on one side of the building, you see one branch, on the other side is the other branch. And then when you come to the prow, which is at the tip of the building, you see this very incredible moment where the two branches come together. And our architects really exploited this. They took out the floor above to create a two-story space and put in a giant two-story picture window so that you could sit here and see that really specific moment.
We turn away from the beautiful window, as hard as that is to do.
Yes.
There is an enormous painting of what the building looked like before?
Correct. And this is a large-scale watercolor by Barbara Prey, who is an artist who has a studio in Williamstown. We commissioned two different views of the buildings, very different kinds of views, and one is Barbara's painting, which is this exact view where we're standing looking back. It shows all of the columns, the wide open space before we renovated, the brick, and it's a great sort of nod to what was here and what is still here.
Let's move through. What is this first hanging sculpture that we approach?
Yeah, this is a sculpture by Louise Bourgeois. Bourgeois was a French artist, and we've been working with her estate on this exhibition of three stoneworks, but then also this hanging sculpture, which is this couple. And all of her work is about the body. It's about humanity. It's about love and sex and all of those things. And it's these two figures. From far away, it just looks like this sort of snarl of shiny metal. And then the first thing that I always notice is you see two pairs of feet sticking out the bottom of it. And then as you get closer to it, you start to notice these hands and you realize it's a couple that's completely enmeshed and intertwined with one another. That's hanging from the ceiling just outside of the gallery where Bourgeois' other works are. These are large carved marble sculptures, two big white sculptures, and they reference eyes and other sort of swirling organic shapes. They're some of the largest carved marbles that she did. And then there's a small piece in the room, which is actually my favorite piece in this room, which from afar looks just sort of like a chunk of stone. But then when you get up close to it, you realize it's a giant pair of googly eyes that are carved out of stone as
well. Oh, it's so cute.
Isn't it adorable?
It's very Muppety.
Yeah, it's like
big.
Totally goofy in the best way possible.
You're looking at the art and suddenly it's looking back at you.
Exactly. and then on the other side of Louise Bourgeois is that second commission of the building that we did. And this is with a group called the Metabolic Studio. And they're based in Los Angeles. Part of them is this division called the Optics Division, and that is Lauren Bon, Rich Nielsen, and Tristan Duke. And they have this device they call the liminal camera. It's a giant sea container strapped to the back of a flatbed truck, and they've turned it into a mobile pinhole camera and darkroom.
I saw it out front,
yes,
right?
It was here in the fall. So they came here in the fall. Tristan was part of the exhibition Explode Every Day. When I visited him in LA, he also showed me some of the work he was doing with the Optics Division, and so I invited them out here as well. And they brought the camera. They traveled around our buildings, and they took a series of portraits from the exterior. So Barbara Prey's is that inside view, and here's the external view. They develop a negative inside the camera, and then they brought those back to California with a bucket of water from the Hoosick River. And when they were exposing the paper for the final prints, they sprinkled water from the Hoosick River on them. So you see these ripples across the surface, which is that action. And so this place is literally embedded in these two photographs, one that shows the river and one that shows the interior courtyard. Next to the Metabolic Studio is the Robert Rauschenberg Foundation. And this is kind of a two-part exhibition. Outside, in the sort of the wide galleries outside the internal galleries, are two works by Rauschenberg. And they're very signature to his work in his use of found materials and also found imagery and screen prints. The first work we see is this kind of long rectangle, this box that's lifted up on wheels. And all along it are different screen prints. And when you look at them, you know, there's things as innocuous as people swimming, John Lennon, and then there's people in gas masks. So, you know, Rauschenberg's work was always looking at the politics of the moment and the culture of the moment. The structure is sort of cantilevered, lit from below, and then has a series of saw blades across the top of it. The title of the piece is The Lurid Attack of the Monsters from the Postal News, August 1875. The work was not done in 1875. It was done in the 90s, I believe. And then the other piece of his is a series of these screen-printed panels. They're about 6.5 feet tall, and they're in sort of L shapes. So they become kind of like a labyrinth. And again, different imagery. There's imagery of a bicycle or a bed or a Coca-Cola sign. And then alongside of Rauschenberg's work, we did a collaboration with the residency program that now exists on his property in Captiva, Florida. And so I was tasked with curating a show of artists who have been there.
Denise Markonish led me through Mass MoCA's new galleries, and here we entered an exhibition entitled Thumbs Up for the Mothership.
The title actually is a mashup of both artists, Don Dedeau, who did a series called Mothership Earth, and Lonnie Holly, who, whenever you meet him, he shakes your hand, gives you a thumbs up, and says, thumbs up for Mother Universe. So it became the two of them. And initially, I put them together in, I always say, in kind of a fever dream. I woke up one day, and I was like, I don't know, it doesn't make sense yet, but I think they have to be together. And I was interested because they were both artists who were from the South, New Orleans and Atlanta, who were really interested in issues of environmentalism, but also use found objects a lot. And these were all things that were very important to Rauschenberg. And so I liked that the opening show of this exchange would have these kind of beautiful nods to Rauschenberg's own practice and life as an artist. When you first walk in the space here, you're in Don Dedeau's work. On one side of the gallery is a sort of whole wall series of these digitally manipulated photographs, and they're of the wetlands in Louisiana. And of course, the wetlands are an area of Louisiana that is disappearing. And so for her, this is the start of this question of, like, what are we doing to our planet? One of the centerpieces of the whole space are these two Corinthian columns, hand-carved Corinthian columns from the south, and a giant wrecking ball. Again, this sort of notion of civilization coming to its own end. On the other side of the room is Lonnie Holly. So Lonnie is, as I mentioned, an artist from Atlanta, and he works exclusively with found objects. For him, all objects tell stories. You know, from a piece which is right next to one of Don's columns, it's a kind of old library ladder, and it's covered in barbed wire and then has a tangle of cords and monitors and keyboards hanging from the middle of it and this light-up globe at the top. It's called Climbing to a Higher Power. All the works for him, you know, tell these different stories about not letting technology lead the way, whereas a piece behind us called Broken But Still Strong is made from materials that he found at Captiva on Rauschenberg's property. It was a bike and a cement mixer that Rauschenberg used to use. And he talks about understanding nature and objects through culture. And both Lonnie and Rauschenberg had Native American ancestors, and that was an important connecting point for him.
Curator Denise Markonish took me through Mass MoCA's newly renovated Building 6. The building and its long-term exhibitions open to the public on Sunday. Here, we met artist Joe Wardwell, who had recently finished installing his new piece, Hello America, 40 Hits from the 50 States. I asked him how he was approached to install this work at Mass MoCA.
Well, Denise is an old friend, and she's known my work for a long time. She's curated me into a few other shows before this. She did a studio visit in 2015 and saw some of the new work that I was doing with putting text over the landscape and text, and saw images of a mural I'd done in New York and started to think about doing a wall work for originally the Hunter Hallway, but now here in Building 6.
And for this specific piece, what's the inspiration? How did you decide to create it and scale it to this size? Because it is enormous.
Yeah, it was inspired by a J.G. Ballard book called Hello America, where 100 years after the American continent's been abandoned after an ecological disaster, these European descendants of Americans return to the continent and traipse across it, much in like a Jack Kerouac on the Road or a Mark Twain kind of way. But it's this wasteland, and there's nobody left there. And at certain points in the book, each character imagines himself as the president of the United States, even though there's nothing to be president really over. There's a certain point in the book where there's a self-appointed President Charles Manson who grabs the main character, Wayne, and says, "Together, Wayne, you and I can make America great again." And I was conceiving of this piece in the run-up to the 2016 election. And at that point, when I read the book, I was like, this is the core of my piece. Since then, I've used the return to the book as structural elements for the mural is going across the whole wall.
Technically, how is it created?
If you think of it as a very large woodblock print, it's color separated with three colors for the landscape that get blended together, much in the way that a Japanese woodblock would be done. And then I went in and stenciled the tree landscape and then put another stencil of larger text over it, created these horizontal bands that riff off the Solowitz, also installed in Mass MoCA, and then created these vertical columns of silk screens going up that are culled from various sources from American culture, from progressive thinkers to rock stars to political slogans from previous presidential elections. And then the vinyl gets peeled off at the end and reveals the landscape below.
While you're putting it up, presumably with a team?
Yeah, we were here on site 21 days and had anywhere from 2 to 4 people working alongside myself at any given time.
Is that moment where you peel away to see the final thing?
It's awesome. Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
I was going to say, is it stressful?
Part. Yeah, no, it's very stressful. Mostly I'm worried that the layers are going to peel with it. But there's nothing like that. It's like, you know, very similar to printmaking where you put something through the press and you flip it over and you get to see the product. You don't know as the process is happening what it's going to look like, which is very different from sort of easel painting where you're constantly reacting to what you're seeing.
This is really spectacular. I can't wait to spend more time with it. And thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you. Thanks very much. My pleasure.
It's great to meet you.
Artist Joe Wardwell spoke with me about his new work installed at Mass MoCA, Hello America, 40 Hits from the 50 States. Now we resume our tour with curator Denise Markanish.
So up on the third floor, we have Laurie Anderson. When we first started talking to Laurie about doing a long-term engagement here, I remember our director, Joe Thompson, early on saying, what would the Museum of Laurie Anderson's voice look like? And I loved that proposition. And so Laurie and I have been working together on figuring out what that is. And of course, the Museum of Laurie's voice is also a museum of visual, experiential, and auditory things. And I think what a lot of people don't know about Laurie is that she went to school as a visual artist. And so when we were deciding what to do with these spaces, she knew she wanted to show some of her more quote-unquote traditional artworks. And she said, I've got these drawings, and I had no idea she made drawings. And she showed me some small images on her computer, and I said, oh, those look really interesting. How big are they? And she said, about 12 feet. And I went, oh. And so what we're seeing here are 10 large-scale drawings, about 10 to 14 feet. They're made of charcoal and white chalk, and they're incredibly gestural. There's all sorts of movement in them. And the whole series shows her dog Lola Bell, who died in 2011 and was the star of her film Heart of the Dog. They show Lola Bell in the Bardo, which the Tibetan Book of the Dead talks about as the 49-day period between death and reincarnation. they're just these kind of incredibly beautiful drawings that I think everybody will be surprised and then like, oh yeah, this is Laura. And I also love the fact that the very first time I met her in 2010, she was here working on the performance Delusion. And I gave her, Lou Reed and Lola Bell, a tour, and we came into this space, Building 6, when it was nothing. And so I like the idea that Lola Bell once got to see the space where her memory would be preserved.
That's outrageous that right. It would happen that way.
Yeah, yeah. The gallery is one separate space. The other two spaces are connected. The first one is an installation called The Chalk Room. When you walk in, you first pass through a red velvet curtain, and then inside the space, I think it's almost like leaping inside of one of her drawings that
yeah.
we just saw.
Yeah, accurate.
She's painted every surface of the room. Everything was painted black, and then with white paint over it, she's painted floor, ceiling, walls, with a series of little drawings and texts, and again, this kind of like swirling gestural space, and then lit all by black light. And then when you come in here, there'll be four virtual reality stations. So people will don the headset, and they'll start in this room, and then they'll be taken off into other spheres, but all very much based on this text flying by them and hearing Laurie telling them stories the whole time.
It didn't occur to me ever until just now that Laurie Anderson's kind of been waiting for VR to catch up with her whole career.
Absolutely. And you know, it's been so interesting to see this work develop because VR is still so much in the gaming yeah. realm, and what she's doing with it is taking it to like the Laurie Anderson realm. Of course, like Laurie is an innovator of technology. Through the chalk room, you can enter into the studio with its bright lime green walls and giant bean bags. So this is a working recording studio that Laurie will use. When she's not using it, it will be a listening space.
As we move through another space, Denise described a second VR piece by Laurie Anderson called Aloft, which is described as a gentle plane crash. Massmocha's Building 6 opens to the public this Sunday.
And next we enter into the realm of Gunnar Schoenbeck. Gunnar Schoenbeck was a musician and music teacher in Bennington. He believed that anybody could be a musician. He used to put ads in the paper that would say things like, "Want to be in an orchestra band? No experience required." And that "no experience required" became the title of the show here, which is actually curated by Mark Stewart, one of the Bang on a Can All-Stars. Mm-hmm. Mark and Bang on a Can and our performing arts folks at Massmocha really rescued these instruments. After Schoenbeck died, Bennington couldn't store them anymore. And so we brought them here, and Bang on a Can often uses them in the summer.
There's more than I thought there were, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's even more than we're actually showing. So we've been storing them here in this building since then, and then of late been renovating, and we've been creating this kind of amazing space. There's this like super 70s orange carpet and cubbies where all the instruments live, and we've soundproofed the room so people can actually come in here and play.
That's awesome. Right? That's so awesome. So some of the signature, I would say, yeah. based on the little bit that I know, is instruments that are huge.
Or instruments that are made of very everyday materials. I mean, like, this is almost like a xylophone, but it's just...
That resonates forever.
Right? Yeah. And it's just like sort of normal metal pipes. Yeah. On like plumbing pipes, you know?
Yeah.
Everything is simple. And if we go outside of the two conjoined rooms, there's more instruments, including, you know, one of my favorites is some of these the insides of pianos. Mm-hmm. How do you play a piano non-traditionally? And it's that the strings are just here and you play the strings rather than the keys. So it's going to be, I think, really fun to watch people interact. And I think, you know, because Massmocha is, you know, so equal performing and visual arts that I love that some of that performing arts element has ended up in this building. And having something like Schoenbeck next to something like Laurie, I think is just going to be so much fun for our audience.
Curator Denise Marconish and I entered another gallery and met Denise's colleague, Ali Forides, who told us about a full campus plan for installations by Jenny Holzer.
It includes 21 of her stone benches, which have texts from all over the course of her career, as well as 5 new projections that she's going to be projecting on the north facade of our building from the end of this month all the way through the 25th of June. And the third sort of moving piece to that puzzle is the Jenny Holzer Galleries inside of Building 6. And what fills those galleries mostly is a series of paintings based on redacted documents that were released via the Freedom of Information Act. Members of the public requested them. Jenny doesn't request them herself. Gathers all of these documents together, hand paints a number of canvases, and then silk screens a copy of the document over top of that. One of the things that it's really important to know about Jenny Holzer's work is that her medium is language more than anything else. She's interested in the way that language can be inflected not only by the medium that you put it on, but also the space that you put it in. So she's interested in the way in which, you know, putting a bench with words on it outside changes your perception of it versus putting a canvas with words on it inside of a gallery. The texts that you see here mostly focus on the violence at Guantanamo Bay and the kind of researchers and special investigators who were trying to understand what had happened there. And the way in which the documents in this space seem to conflict with each other and are a little hard to understand is really sort of a reflection of the difficulty of understanding what the situation was there and continues to be. There are also pieces to this exhibition that are a little bit further in the past with Jenny's work. You'll see a series of tables with bones on top of them, all of which are human bones. They're not replicas. And they are from her Lustmord series, which was in the 1990s. She put together a series of texts that were distilled from interviews with women and also children who had suffered sexual abuse during the conflicts in Syria. And there are small silver bands that go around some of these bones that have those texts inscribed on them. There are 2 of those tables. You'll also see 2 benches, which are part of a series of texts that Jenny wrote as memorials to people who were both victims and perpetrators of violence at Erlauf in Austria, which was where the peace accords between the Allies were signed at the end of World War II. So you really have kind of a lot of different moments of conflict and a lot of different moments where she's interested in whose voice is heard during times of wartime and times of conflict.
Mass MoCA curator Ali Forides telling us about the work by Jenny Holzer, newly on display and opening to the public this Sunday. We continue through Building 6 with Denise Marconish.
Okay, so now we're heading down to the ground floor. There's 2 more wall works in the building. One that is on the 3rd floor, on the wall, the back walls of Laurie Anderson, and it's a piece by Janice Kerbel, who's a Canadian artist living in London, and it's called Slip, and it's part of a score that she created using language and taking language from cartoons and films that signify those different moments of action. The final part of this score illustrates slipping on a banana peel. And so it's this word slip cascading and then dropping off the wall. That was curated by Ali. And then the Joe Wardwell work. The last piece is by Mary Lum, who is an artist whose studio is in North Adams. This one was curated by Susan Cross. And it's in sort of one of the more non-traditional spaces. Eventually, this red door.
It's a garage door.
Red garage door will be open. And you can see there's another red garage door to our left, which will also be open. And there will be a bike path that people will be able to ride their bikes through this little cut through. And then they'll be on the green grassy bank on the side of the river. And in this whole space is a wall work by Mary Lum, and it's all based on lorem ipsum, the language that graphic designers plug in when they're working out before they have a final text. So it's this obscured sense of language and not being able to read it. And it's all black and white and has these mirrors placed throughout it. So one of the other main entrances to Building 6 will be through our courtyards, which are where a lot of our concerts take place. And that main entrance leads you right into the James Terrell, which is on the mostly on the ground floor. There's two pieces up on the second floor by Joe Wardwell's drawing. Terrell is an artist who, for decades, has been working with light as his material. How do you spatialize light and create these kind of immersive, ineffable experiences with just light and architecture? So we have this sequence of rooms here, 9 in total, and each room is a different work of his. And so he looked through his whole career and chose works from different periods, sort of coming up with a prime example of each type of work. So the first one that we see is one of these corner works. So when you walk into the space, you see a triangle hovering in the space. That's really the first thing that your eye creates. Of course, when you go closer to it, you can see that there's this architectural inverted corner, so it comes out rather than goes in, and there's light installed behind it. And that is a programmable light that creates this sort of soft hovering shape.
I don't know what I'm looking at. Exactly. It's a pyramid, but it's also not. And it's at the end of the room, but I really couldn't tell if it was away from the wall or on it.
Yeah, you can't tell if it's floating, if it's 3D. There's all of this, even as you get up close to it, the angles all soften and everything just starts to disappear. And it's always just really this very optical moment. Like right now, all I'm seeing is this like hot pink dot in the middle of it.
Yeah, the color is changing. And I was looking at it thinking, is the light changing? I think my eyes are just adjusting to the light. Yeah. In a way.
And that's the thing that he wants you to keep questioning.
At this point, Denise and I walked through and talked about a few other pieces by James Terrell. They are stimulating, perplexing, and mesmerizing. And here I spare you a few minutes of inarticulate exclamations on my part. And just like that, our tour is done.
Congratulations on all the work, and thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Always great to have you here.
This Sunday, May 28th, Mass MoCA will have a day-long celebration to mark the opening of Building 6, the Robert W. Wilson Building, including welcoming remarks from Museum Director Joseph Thompson, a Nick Cave sound suit performance, Brooklyn United Marching Band, and Cake in Concert on Joe's Field. For more information, visit massmoca.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.